What's happening, beautiful people? Welcome back to the Thrive After Sports podcast. What you're about to listen to is an interview with Carly Corrigan, who is the director of student athlete development at Fresno State. Shout out to Carly for being an amazing host during my time visiting the school and speaking to the student athletes there. I thought it would be great to do an interview with Carly, talking about her journey into student athlete development and also talking about some of the great things she's working on at Fresno State, as well as giving some advice to future leaders in student athlete development. Carly is someone who treats her role like she's still playing ball. She's a prime example of what it looks like to thrive after sports because she brings her athletic mentality to everything that she's doing at Fresno State. So without further ado, let's get into this interview with Carly Corrigan. All right, folks, welcome back to another episode of the Thrive After Sports podcast. This is actually a very special episode. This is my first in-person episode. I'm here with Carly Corrigan, the Director of Student Athlete Development at Fresno State University. What's going on, Carly?
Happy to be here. I'm honored to be your first in-person guest. I don't know if I knew that, but that's pretty awesome. No, I'm excited to just talk to you about what's going on in student athlete development and Fresno State, and we're excited to have you on campus.
Thank you. Yep. Carly invited me to speak, and like I'm speaking in like an hour or so. And one of the things I want to share with Carly before we get into this today is Carly is someone who very early on I was kind of watching from a distance. And I told you this when we first met. I have been watching some of the stuff you put out, and like there's something different about this programming, or maybe just how you were sharing things on LinkedIn and kind of your heart behind it, like your heart behind the programming itself. I was like, this is different. I have to reach out to this woman. And then when we had a conversation, it was very clear that you are someone who not only cares about the student athletes, and I think, I know this sounds crazy, but as you know, I talk to a lot of people in student athlete development around the country, as you do too. Some people are there because it's just within their comfort zone. You know, it's kind of like, hey, I was an athlete, so I want to help other athletes. And some people are kind of just there for a paycheck, unfortunately. And I think that impacts the student athletes that they're serving. But I say all that to say, not to be negative, you were someone who very early on, it was clear to me that you actually wanted to make a difference, and you're doing that. And then also, like we were talking about recently, you are someone who does very well in your role with collaborating with the different departments. And I think that's important and a part of the job that gets overlooked, especially with the changing landscape of college athletics, which we'll get into. So, but before we start with that, I do want to kind of give a little bit of background of your story. I know you were a hooper, right? Let's talk about just your journey from, I know you didn't graduate, walk across the stage, and then, you know, just end up here at Fresno State. So what was that journey like?
Yeah, so former Southern Illinois Salukis, go Dogs, but had the greatest experience of my life. You know, it was everything that you could want being a student athlete to be. I grew, it changed me in more ways than I even knew right when I graduated, and from the people to my teammates to just the experience in general. So from there, I got my master's at the University of Memphis, so got to experience working in an academic services department and all of that type of, all that professional jazz. Had some great mentors through that program, and then I was one of the very few people in athletics that gets hired without knowing somebody, and Fresno State was that place. Very thankfully. So started as an academic advisor and learning specialist. We didn't have this role when I started. And I think that was really important in my journey because I was able to see the experience from the academic lens. And then when building this Bulldog Built program, I was able to really like collaborate and combine some things and some kind of nuggets that I learned from that experience into being like, oh, we can, number one, we should be very aligned in everything that we do. And number two, adding on to that, like they're getting an exceptional academic experience, but how do we make it more of an experiential, like holistic learning experience for them? And so that was, I think, more defining than I realized at the time. But now, you know, doing Bulldog Build, I'm the first person to hold this position here. And that's been really fun. And so I'm really thankful you kind of took note early on before we even chatted of kind of the uniqueness of our program, because we really did build it in a way that made sense for our students and our student athletes. And so this community wraps its arms around anything that Fresno State does. We're the biggest show in town. And so being able to have the connectivity with the community and also, you know, again, build it in a way so they would be involved because we want them involved, we need them involved, and just kind of all of the partnerships, even within our department, were critical. Mm-hmm.
I noticed, Carly, that often when we're talking, the word holistic comes up a lot. And that was probably one of the things that stood out to me most about you, is that holistic approach. I think that shines through in the way that this department operates and some of the things you guys are putting together. There's no box checking going on of like, oh, we need to do this, we need to do that. It's more about like what is going to best serve the student athletes, and let's put together some programming around that. So essentially, I didn't know that you actually kind of, it sounds like this role was created for you, or you basically created this role, like coming from student success, right? Or learning specialist, like how did you kind of, I want to hear more, like how did you basically create your own position? That's pretty cool.
Well, I wish that was actually the case, but it was being created from administration. So they had created this role because we needed it. We were a little bit behind the times in developing that for our level. And so they created it, and then I was fortunate enough, like through the interview process, and there was competition and all the things, I was fortunate enough to be able to be the one to do it. And I think, you know, a combination of just my knowledge and understanding of our campus and our community, and having done naturally some of the work already. I go back to the COVID times and working with our baseball program, a lot of them should have been drafted and they weren't drafted. And so we were kind of, I was helping them through that transition that was unexpected. You know, they went from March being like, oh, I'm going to be a top 10 draft pick, to, oh, there's only X amount of rounds now. So kind of working on a expedited process through some of this stuff with them really kind of sparked my interest. And then it just happened in 2021 that this department was essentially created, and I was fortunate to be able to be the person. So.
So you cut your teeth during COVID times, forged in the fire of COVID, so to speak, you know?
Yeah, which turned out to benefit me for sure. You know, I had some experience at University of Memphis, but not a ton by, you know, and so just my experience here, being able to wear a lot of hats, really provided that opportunity.
Right.
So a lot of hats is never a bad thing, in my opinion.
That's right. Yeah, for sure.
I like, as much as we can get our hands on, I'm going to get my hands on it, so.
Let's talk about wearing a lot of hats, because as we were taking you were giving me a campus tour, and it kept coming up. You were telling me about the idea of the way you collaborate with different departments, with the rapidly changing landscape of college athletics. You got NIL, you got, I mean, you should be telling me this, but like, how do you navigate those waters, and how intentional are you about making sure that you're collaborating with other departments, if that makes sense?
Yeah, and I think that goes to the holistic word, you know? So not only did my transition from being a student athlete make me emphasize the importance of a holistic, I mean, life really, but like real balance and making sure that we kind of had our feet really rooted in all areas, but I think that plays into the collaboration, plays into being able to provide those holistic experiences. Because if I don't know what's going on with name, image, and likeness, that's going to be really hard for me to be able to help show our student athletes how, number one, that is a job. So you can put that as work experience. Anyone who's not, you're missing the boat a little bit, right? Like, you are getting paid. Influencers are full-time people. If your social media is your jam, you know, going to appearances, that's a job. So if I don't know that, and I don't have the wherewithal to have those conversations with those people, I'm doing our student athletes a disservice, because now I'm not able to speak their language and meet them where they're at, so to speak. So from that standpoint, I think it's really important. But then also from a community standpoint and everything they can provide, you know, we are a university, we have great resources, but also we're higher education. And so we need to be able to extend into, you know, we have a high ag major population. Well, I need to be able to provide them with hands-on real world experience through our community. And our community is amazing and they love doing that. And so that's where I'm really lucky, because it's easy, it's an easy ask. But without having the side of the experiential learning piece, it can, you know, that's not holistic, in my opinion. That's a check of the box. Oh, your resume's done.
Right.
Good luck. Go get a job.
Right. Man.
And we all know that's not how it works, right? Mm-hmm. People that work for 15 years struggle sometimes. So I think that's really the relationship piece, the holistic piece of, it's more than just like, hey, you know, director of NIL, like, what do you think? No, it's really like getting into the weeds and the nitty gritty of things and being like, hey, like, help, like, what do I need to know? How can this mean more than just what it says on paper? Hmm.
From what you've seen or just conversations that you've had with your peers at other universities, do you feel like there's a lack of, you know, cross-department collaboration? Is everyone, because typically from what I see, people I talk to, it's kind of everyone's in their own silo, just trying to keep their head above water, to be honest.
Yeah, I think it really just depends. Mm-hmm. I mean, this has been my only full-time institution that I've worked at, so I think it really depends. Some people have really great cross-collaboration, I think. Some people maybe not, and some people have none. Mm-hmm. And so what I always talk to people, especially in the student athlete development role, is your coworkers are going to be your biggest advocates, your best allies, because they're going to keep you in tune with kind of everything else that's going on. So you can be aware of opportunities like our marketing program. They have an amazing internship program. Mm-hmm. We have so many student athletes that want to be in marketing, whether it's social media marketing, whether it's game management, whether it's sports information. But if I don't know that, how can I provide that opportunity for them?
Right.
So you have to just really like get out of the silo and work on those relationships. It's the same thing with fundraising. I think I've shared with you before, like, I've had an amazing career champion who's now moved on and is an athletics director because he's awesome, that encouraged me to know how to fundraise. And so because of that, I've been able to navigate some of those conversations that I've raised money for the program. And it's, you know, it's twofold. It's an openness on their end to give me access and information, but it's also a willingness to learn outside of your job description. And so, and I'm also, you know, grateful for my supervisor that's encouraged that as well, that, you know, she's allowed me to do that because it's been beneficial for our student athletes. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it starts with a relationship, and then I think there's a functional piece that you add on to that of like, okay, like, let me help myself.
Right. On that note of helping yourself, personal development. I want to, actually, before we get into personal development, I have to say something about this fundraising piece, because this is important, because I think something you said to me when we were walking around earlier is really important in the sense that, like, I work with a lot of athletes who want to get into student athlete development in some mm-hmm. way, shape, or form. They want to be in an athletic department and around athletes. The first thing about that is I'm always very intentional about, like, making sure that they're wanting to do that because it's the right thing and not mm-hmm. just in their comfort zone. But another thing is that I don't know if they really understand the work that goes into it, and then also the level that you need to improve yourself to constantly get better at your craft, mm-hmm. just like you do mm-hmm. in your sport, right? And so on the fundraising piece, and this, I guess, ties into personal development in a roundabout way, but you were telling me that at a certain point, I can't remember his name, the guy who you said mm-hmm. moved on.
And, yeah.
But he was basically telling you, like, hey, you know, you can actually go do this on your own. And he mm-hmm. was actually helping you become a better fundraiser. How important do you think that is when, and I'm just trying to set the expectations for those guys listening, because some people think, like, yeah, this is an easy job where I just basically get to put a bunch of resources in front of athletes and they love me and I'm, like, the hero. But, like, how much work from a fundraising or otherwise, how much work goes into actually making things like this happen to put resources in front of student athletes?
Yeah. Well, it definitely was not an overnight operation. Mm-hmm. But it was probably like 2 years worth of me spending time like learning, and again, like his willingness to show me some of those like layers of fundraising. Like, it's not, you just don't go ask people for money, whether it's $100 or $1 million. Like, you just don't go ask for people. You just don't do that. That's not how it works, right? Mm-hmm. It's about stewardship. It's about thanking people 7 times. It's about like all of those types of things. Yeah, I'm stealing your words, Tim Collins. I'll shout them out right there. AD at Eastern Washington. I'm stealing your words, but you know, 7 thank yous and like making sure there's that connectivity and you're not just always asking them for something, like you're remembering things about people. And and so, you know, over the course of 2 years, you know, he would bring me to lunch and he with the donors, and just kind of I would just got to observe how he navigated those conversations. And it in turn, by, you know, year 3, it was like, okay, like this is what you need to do. go for it. And I was like, oh, okay.
Wow.
But it was a great learning experience, like start to finish, because now it's a matter of just being more comfortable, right? But it, again, it's twofold. It's them being willing to open that door and me being willing to be uncomfortable in the beginning and like learn and then be able to do it, you know?
Right.
And it, you know, it, once you get out of the comfort zone, I think things come a little bit more, it just becomes more simple.
Right? Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like you're getting your first start, right? Like you're always nervous. You're shaking. You're shaking. And then, you know, 2 years later, you're laughing at the freshman. That's like, you see him shaking. You're like, oh my gosh.
Right.
Just don't turn the ball over. So.
That's actually a perfect segue. You talk about getting out of your comfort zone. Obviously, you're someone who's very into personal development. You take that seriously. We have been talking about that pretty much this whole time, the way you grow and develop yourself. But just in general, and I know like, you can really only speak to probably Memphis and Fresno State, but what is it? Let me just come out and, like, before we started recording, all right, folks, check this out. I didn't know this, all right? So Carly was telling me that you actually have to apply for personal development a lot of times as a student athlete development professional, which I did not know. I just assumed that the resources were being put in front of you guys, just like you guys put resources in front of the students. So. What can you speak a little bit to that personal development side of things when it comes to the folks who are serving the athletes?
Yeah, so there's tremendous programs, as we all know, in all the organizations. They've impacted me a whole lot. Like, they're really, really like top-notch, top tier. I think where the longer you're kind of in the space, you're also your development diversifies, right? So, you know, as somebody who's been doing this for X amount of years, my development should look different than somebody who maybe is in their first year or is walking into an already established program. You know, like, I needed development from a standpoint of being able to have hard conversations, being, you know, talking to coaches and administration and leveraging and vouching for the program and being data driven, where that might be different if you're not having to do all of that in your first role, if that makes sense. And so I think that piece is really like the reflection from a personal standpoint of like, what do you need? And being okay. And I think as athletes, as former athletes, it's hard to sometimes be like, yeah, I'm just really not great in that area. But having kind of the courage almost to be like, I need help in this, or I need some sort of like program in that, and then taking the initiative to go find it. You know, there's not always somebody in the gym with you when you're practicing. Like, it's the same parallel, right? So using free resources like LinkedIn, like Coursa, like, you know, whatever that looks like for you in an area that you really want to develop. And I think also like to take that next step, right? Like, you start as a coordinator and then you want to be a director. Well, how are you going to get there? You can't always get that development from established programs. Like, it has to be something that you have to be self-aware enough to know where you need to grow and then take the initiative and apply for the programs and all the things, right? But the reality is it might take you a try or two to get in, and that's okay. You can still not just be stuck, right? Like, you have to keep figuring out what that is.
Well, I love everything you said, but a couple things that stood out to me specifically is just how you're talking about being proactive. And I think that you'll hear me talk about this a lot tonight, is like, kind of, we live in this bubble where we're athletes, of everything is brought to us on a silver platter. And then when you're in a role, even like this, which is still technically working with athletes, you have to still be proactive about, like you said, identifying what you need and then going and seeking that out. And then also something else you said is that, like, it's not easy for athletes to be able to say, I'm not good at this thing. And you're going to hear me talk about this tonight, too, is like, I have this thing called, like, you're a freshman in life, basically, where you're going out and you're basically a rookie again. And you have to be comfortable with that and embrace that. And just like when you were a rookie in your sport, do what you need to do to learn from people above you and improve and things like that.
Right.
So now, you told me earlier today that sometimes there are conversations, like, and I know this is common across universities, where sometimes, like, athletes don't really, they don't really see, or they don't understand why these things are important necessarily, the things that you, not just you, but everyone here is trying to put in front of them. And like, honestly, I didn't see it either when I was 18, 19, 20, 21. Like, I'm just thinking about, you know, when is this going to be over so I can go get some chicken strips before practice, right? And so how do you sort of like get that message across, and what methods do you use to make sure that people, or that student athletes, understand like, this is important stuff and this is going to help you years beyond your time at Fresno State?
Yeah, I think it goes back to that relationship. Mm-hmm. Not only with the student athletes, but who are the players in their world, right? It could be a head coach, it could be an assistant coach, it could be their athletic trainer, it could be, you have to identify who kind of those gatekeepers are so that you can help from, again, a holistic standpoint, everybody see like what's happening and why, mm-hmm. And you know, going from there. So like relationally, being able to connect with student athletes, like, duh, you know, that's what we're in. We're in the business of people, right? Like, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, in its purest form, we as practitioners are serving the student athlete population. So the relationship piece is, you know, one side, but then the coaches and the support staff, I think, is another side. And so that takes getting out of your office. That takes asking people what's going on in your world. Well, and then they're going to ask you what's going on in yours. And you can be like, you know, X, Y, and Z. And they'll be like, oh, well, did you know? And I'm like, no, I didn't know that. I had no idea. Well, this makes a lot more sense now. Right. Like, I didn't know they were working after practice. That makes sense why they haven't shown up all semester. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, now I can tailor their experience more to them and check in a different way and be like, hey, I heard you're working. Like, A, is everything okay? That's always the first question. Right. And B, you know, how can I support you in a different way? I get this doesn't work. That's totally fine. It's not a one size fits all because everyone's at a different place at a different time. So it goes really to those relationships and, mm-hmm. you know, the stakeholder piece as well from, you know, coaches and administration of really being like, you know, this is how we're doing it. This is why. And the transparency factor of that is something that I think my supervisor and I have really tried to, you know, make a priority because, and I think it's really helped because there's so much going on. There's so much going on all the time, like actually going on, like taking up time, and then just also like going on in everyone's life and in their work and all the things. So knowledge is power. And that's mm-hmm. kind of something that I think has really helped. You might say it five times and the sixth time they would be like, oh, I want to do that now. And but that's okay, right? It's just having the wherewithal to know that it's not for everybody all at once, all the time, mm-hmm. and that's okay. So mm-hmm. really, like, the finding the relationships where they're at and how you can get to them. Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
I love your approach to this role. Like, I really do. I'm not just telling you that to gas you up. Like, I just feel like you approach this like an athlete would, and I think that's so important. Like, you approach this role and everything you do here like every day is game day, and you come in here like you're playing ball and you're trying to be the best player on the court for your teammates and for the athletes. That's really inspiring to me to see that. And so you've given us a really solid glimpse into what it's like day to day and what actually goes into this role, and not just what goes into this role, but what it takes to do this role well. What advice would you have for, like I said, I speak to a lot of athletes who think they, some, mm-hmm. I mean, they have gone on to work in athletic departments and they're thriving, no pun mm-hmm. intended. But some people would be better served to be doing other things. So for someone who's listening to this episode, they're like, yeah, I really do want to work in student athlete development or just in, you know, college athletics in general. What advice would you have for them, A, to make sure that it's the right path for them, and then B, to actually get a foot in the door and land a job in this mm-hmm. industry or in this, you know, at a university?
Yeah, so in the exploration phase, mm-hmm. there's no bad question. That is something I would really encourage people that want to get into the space to ask, because everywhere operates so differently. You know, I could go, so I've been doing this for however many years now, and I could go somewhere else and it's just different, right? Like the way the campus operates, it's different. Sometimes like you're at campus, you have a dotted line to athletics instead of being part of the athletics department. And so just really do your research and understanding what the environment is like and who some of those like collaborative stakeholders are, because that will kickstart you on another level if and when you do get into that role and be like, okay, my first 30 days, and then you can answer that question. First 30 days, I need to meet with Career Development Center, Money Management Center, fundraising, name, image, and likeness, whoever else is kind of has a role at that institution, and those that you maybe don't directly connect to. You know, what does an internship program look like on campus? Do we have one here? You know, so just kind of really doing your research on the actual structure so that when you get the job, there's not a ton of time wasted and you kind of know the landscape that you're operating in. Because you could waste 2 months. You know, if you get hired in August, now it's October, and you're just figuring out, you know, the best place to get tables and chairs from. Like, you know, and but that's real. Like, those are the types of things you know, there's event planning in this business, okay?
That was a funny example. You know, that was a funny example, too. Like, 2 months in, you're like, man, where do I get these tables and chairs? That's, right. That's a hilarious example right there.
So, but that wastes time, you know? Now I'm spending an hour and a half tracking them down.
That's real.
And I got 3 students outside my office. Mm-hmm. So it's all about like the efficiency of some of that too. But so that's one thing I would say. And then, you know, to get your foot in the door, networking, but that's really generic, right? That's a check of the box answer. But well, have a plan. Mm-hmm. Like that is my biggest thing. So we have a 1-unit professional development class here. And, you know, that's something that I share with students all the time is don't like, you have to have a plan, like make a plan for yourself. You're not going to know exactly what you do anytime you sit in a new role, mm-hmm. right? Like when there's a new person, it can be attacked differently, right? You have different strengths. You have different things that, you know, you value and you're putting your own kind of flair on whatever it is, no matter what job you're in. If you're in a sales job, you could sell the same product totally different than me, mm-hmm. but we could have the same sales and end of the year sales, right? So, right. I think number one, like being super aware of your values and your value to the organization, but then how you would do the job. You have to tell people that. And you know what, like honestly, my coworkers make fun of me, but like when I interviewed with my coworkers, I was so extra. And they weren't gonna ask me a question because I already had it in front of them. You know, that's something that I really encourage them to like have some forethought of that. Like see what the roles and responsibilities are in the job description and then plan how you would do them. Mm-hmm. Or have at least informed questions on what that looks like. And I think it's the same in this industry. So take it, you know, a step beyond that networking and like really think about some of that. And, you know, we had a guest speaker that's why he was our guest speaker because he co-signed that. Like his messaging was exactly the same. And I was like, yeah, I'm not even going to tell them. I'm going to let you tell them because mm-hmm. I've told them 100 things already. So, right. You know, I think that that's part of it, but you know, I chose him because I had already done that. I had already lived that. And so, I think that's a super important thing. Like don't just want the job, but know how you're going to do the job before you get it.
That was a bar right there. That was good. I like that. Now, you just gave some really solid advice for folks wanting to get into athletics. And you even kind of, because my next question was going to be general advice to athletes who are just trying to figure out how to transition into whatever it is that they want to do. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, I mean, there are a lot of points you already shared, but like, does anything else come to mind in terms of those athletes who are like, Carly, I just really don't know. And I know you have these conversations all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you help athletes navigate those types of conversations?
I say connect with Taj on LinkedIn.
That's a great answer. No, that's a great answer.
No, but for me, it goes back, it goes into their values. Mm-hmm. That is what I think, and that's something that I learned in my transition out, is if you can't identify that and you don't know what's stemming from those, mm-hmm. it's going to be really hard for you to make a decision. Mm. And even if you don't make the right decision, you at least know how you got there.
Right.
And so, you know, that's something that I'm always like, okay, well, number one, let's identify like your strengths and where that might fit in. Like, what do you like? You know, let's talk about your strengths. But then really, like, what are your values? Oh, I love people. Okay, well, do you want to be in sales? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not money motivated. Okay. Well, then maybe sales isn't the thing. Maybe, you know, and not that all sales is money motivated, but like, you know, typically like if there's some level of commission, that's mm-hmm. better for somebody who's money motivated, right? If their thing is like, I just want to work and I just want to go home at 5 and not have a care in the world. Well, then we probably know some industries to stay away from where that's not the case.
Right.
You know, I really just think like that is what I always tell them to lean into. Lean into your values, and you will typically end up in a place you're pretty comfortable with, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't mean it's going to be easy. It doesn't mean there's not going to be challenges. But if that's how you got there, it's not a bad decision, in my opinion.
Well, I just love the fact that you're asking them, like, basically teaching them to ask questions that they should be asking themselves, mm-hmm. because I think that's the most important thing. And I think, like, if we use sales as an example, I'm going to talk about this later tonight, too. I think there are some stereotypical former athlete careers. Mm-hmm. Not that they, you know, just like being working in athletics, like, it doesn't mean that you should avoid those. But I think sometimes people try to steer mm-hmm. former athletes into careers just because it's like, oh, you should do sales, you should work mm-hmm. in athletics, you should be a coach, you should be a sports agent, all yeah. these things. And oftentimes there's not someone they can talk to ask them questions. So I think that yeah. was really, really strong advice you gave. Like, I just love that you're asking questions and teaching them. And folks, Carly just gave you some questions you can ask yourself. So, mm-hmm.
yeah, the questions, like, it's a challenge. It's uncomfortable sometimes because mm-hmm. you're challenging them. And that's where I think, you know, there can sometimes be a barrier of, like, creating this comfortable, open environment. It mm-hmm. doesn't mean you can't challenge them within that challenge and support theory, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that's real, and it's alive and living in this space, because I can't, like, I don't know what's going to make them happy. You know, I don't know what they do outside of their practice or competition or my office, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's really hard to give them that answer. And how else can you help them except help them find it themselves? So.
Right. Amen. Mic drop. Final question. What advice would you give to your younger self, Carly, as she was like walking? Do you remember the moment you like walked out of the locker room for the last time? Like, damn, I just played my last game. Mm-hmm. Like, what advice would you give to her at that moment?
I just got the chills. I'm gonna take it beyond that, from when they mm-hmm. changed the code on us to the locker room.
Oh,
I was so the last game is one thing. Don't get me wrong. You know, if you're a spring sport, a little bit different, but you know. You're still there, right?
Right.
So your world doesn't necessarily change. When it does change is when you're taking the last 4 years of your life out of your locker in a black trash bag over your shoulder and putting it in your car, and you're like, guess this is it. 'Cause that's what happens.
Yeah.
They got trash bags on the floor, clean out your stuff, somebody new's coming in 2 weeks. So I think that version, I would tell her, I would tell her not to shy away from what being a student athlete had taught her. Mm. So I think, backing that up a little bit, I would say to identify that. And I think there's things you identify over the years in your different phases of life, but I would say don't shy away from that. Like, mm-hmm. have confidence in your ability, even if it's not exactly the same as somebody else, or it's not a comfortable situation. Like, mm-hmm. lean into what got you to graduate and to play for 4 years.
Okay. That's good. Yeah.
That's what I would say.
I love it. That's it's so funny. Like, I have this recurring dream. I actually had one last night that I'm trying to get in, like, to the locker room, or I feel like I'm in my locker room in college, but I'm not supposed to be there.
Yeah.
And I talk to a lot of
scary.
Yeah, it's kind of like, why do so many people have this dream? You know. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Carly, this has been phenomenal. Thank you for taking some time to do this today, amongst the many other things you're doing here. Where can people, I'm going to have all your contact info, not all your contact info, okay, but like, where do you want to point people to if they want to get in touch with you or follow you or anything like that?
Yeah, LinkedIn, or probably LinkedIn.
Yeah, let's go LinkedIn. LinkedIn. Let's do LinkedIn.
I want to say, I'm just going to go LinkedIn. It's easy. Yeah, but find me on there, reach out. I'm happy to connect with people and just talk.
Perfect. Cool. Well, this has been another great episode of Thrive After Sports. Carly, you are a prime example of what it means to thrive after sports. So thanks for coming on the show today. Folks, we'll see you on the next episode. Peace.
Thank you.
That was great.